Good afternoon. It's 3 p.m., 88 degrees and fair here on the campus of UL Lafayette. Coming up at 4 o'clock, it's All Things Considered from NPR News. We're going to start this hour by going into the interview studio with Judith Merriweather.
Joining me in the KRVS studios this afternoon, I'm very happy to say, is author Maggie Collins. Maggie is an alum of UL Lafayette, got her degree in English, and is here today to talk about her first novel called Celestial Blue Skies that was published by Battered Suitcase Press. Her book was a finalist in the William Faulkner Creative Writing Contest. It was in the Ernest J. Gaines Award Contest, and was also nominated for the Pushcart Prize, a national prize that recognizes the best small press publications. So it's been getting a lot of notice. So we're really happy to have you here to talk about it. And again, especially as you are an alum. So this is your first novel. Yeah, you have another one in the pipe, and we might talk just a bit about that one a little bit later on. Have you written for a long time, or have you always, were you one of those children that scribbled little stories and wrote things down?
Yes, I enjoyed writing in high school and in middle school. I wrote, of course, for UL. I used to write for the Vermilion. I used to be the liberal columnist for the Vermilion.
Excellent.
A while back, I also wrote for La Carrière.
The yearbook.
Yes, I did. So I'm back home.
You're back home here, and you obviously had a lot of writing experiences here.
Yes, I did.
You did. So how did you enjoy your time here? That wasn't too far away from home because you're from Lauraville.
Yes, I'm from Lauraville. I enjoyed my time at UL. It was fun. It was the best years, some of the best years of my life. I met my husband here, and that's how I got my two kids, Zelvin and Quentin Collins. I made a lot of good friends, great friends that I still have from UL. I think I got an excellent education at UL in English. I had some awesome professors. I think Dr. Furstel is still here, and Dr. Maurice Duquenet. Those are a couple that I know that are still at UL. I had Dr. Rickles. Some great professors that taught me really well. They gave me a love of literature.
You have just mentioned some very fine English professors here at the university. And some people might wonder, since you were nominated for the Ernest Gaines Award, did you ever take a class with him? Did you ever have that opportunity?
No, I didn't. Yeah. I would love to have done so, because he's one of my favorite authors. I love the Diary of Miss Jane Pittman. I love Gathering of Old Men. He's an excellent, excellent author.
Yes.
And we kind of share the same kind of writing style, because we both write about the rural South. We like our Southern literature. And I would have loved to have taken a class with him. I've met him before with the Faulkner Society. He's been with them a couple of times, and I've gone to some events and I've seen him there. He's gotten up in age, but he's still here. And we have a library. We have a part
the
of
Ernest
the
Ernest J. Gaines
yeah,
Center is
the
in
center,
the library.
Mm-hmm. And which is quite deserving, because he has given America a lot of great literature.
That's right. And even if you weren't able to take a class while you were here, I always feel like his influence just permeates, particularly the English department, but the campus as well, and certainly so many fine young scholars and writers came through that department and were influenced, were inspired by him, whether
yes.
or not they had a class with him.
Yes.
Yes. And I'm glad you mentioned that there are some influences that we see in both of your writing, and you do write about a very small community, very intimately, really interesting. So let's talk about that community. You came from Lauraville, grew up in a Creole French environment. You use a lot of French words in your writing.
Yes. My father, Alvin Ozingan, had he speaks French. He still speaks French. My sons, I try to get them to speak French with their grandfather, because I feel that's important. I want to try to get them to learn to speak more French, because, you know, it's kind of dying. They never really taught us how to speak it. And He speaks some more Creole French, but I can understand with the French lessons that I've had at UL. I had 12 hours of French at UL, and I'm trying to brush up on my French as well.
Well, I found it fascinating how you wove French and translations of French phrases in your story. You really use that well, and I think anyone who is not from here would very much enjoy your presentation of the French language. You make it very unique, very particular to this area, but it's very understandable.
Yes, I did try to do that. It has dialogue, and a lot of people tell me that's a strong point of Celestial Blue Skies. It has beautiful dialogue, and I know a lot of Southern writers and writers in particular don't like to use a whole lot of dialect, but I did because I wanted to, let people see the uniqueness of our culture. You know, we don't have too many writers from Acadiana who write about Acadiana. Mm-hmm. And that's what's so unique about Celestial Blue Skies. It's about Acadiana. It's written about by an Acadian. And it has the French in it. It has the family in it. It has so much. It's a rich book with culture. You know, it's about African cultures influenced by the folktale that was told by my Uncle Romare to me, The Curse of the Mulatto, which was told by the slaves. So it has that, you know, that African literature in it as well. I like the way it came together. It took me 8 years to write the book.
So you had a story, you had a kernel of a story that you refined over many years, but you describe your process as quite a flow, that you never really had a writer's block, that even if it took you 8 years, you were really refining.
Yes, it was more so refining. This book just came to my spirit, you know. Mm-hmm. It's kind of, you know, because like when my Uncle Romare died, I did grieve for him. And, you know, I like the story. I wanted to write something that had that African background, you know, because, you know, the slaves, they couldn't read or write, but they told the stories.
The oral stories.
The oral stories.
Yeah.
And it was so fascinating. And I wanted to get something around that culture, mm-hmm. you know, for Celestial Blue Skies. I wanted to take that folk tale and kind of wrap around it, you know. And The Curse of Mulatto is about, being cursed, a family. And that happens in a lot of family. I've even heard it in my family. They feel like, ancestral curses, which come from the Bible as well. And, this family feels as a curse on them. And then the family is redeemed at the end because, you know, they find out that they're not cursed.
So those stories stayed with you. You listened to your family's stories, and the language and the storytelling was very important to you growing up. That obviously affected you.
Yes.
So talk just a bit about that very unique language that you're drawn to and that style of storytelling before we actually get into the plot of the story.
Okay.
What is it about that? You've mentioned an uncle in particular who was obviously good at stories. You must have been very attentive to just the daily conversations between people as well, because you do that quite well in the book.
Yeah, like a lot of female Southern writers, I like to listen. I just sit down and listen to the way that people talk, and it always fascinated me. Mm-hmm. Especially with my Francophone culture and, you know, listen to them speak French. I would just go and sit down and just watch them speak. My grandfather and my father, they would just speak French to each other, and it just seems so strange and all these words coming out. And, I wanted to kind of weave that in. And then, you know, like instead of thing, it's ting and meh and share. You know, those words that they use in the Creole language.
Mm-hmm. And in addition to just those particular words you're mentioning, you really have a wonderful sense of the rhythm of the language and that musicality of the language when it's being spoken between two people. And that's really lovely and very authentic. It's a
Thank
very
you.
Authentic
Thank
voice.
You. Yes, I did try to make it flow. Flow for the different characters. Mm-hmm. It's told through the voices of four different women. Well, maybe more than four. Each chapter is dedicated from a point of view from a different woman. Mm-hmm. But most of the point of views are from Celeste, because it's about Celestial's blue skies. It has religion in it, and that's a theme in a lot of Louisiana literature. The sky represents the Virgin Mary. and religion in the Acadiana Catholic religion, particularly, it's very prevalent in our culture.
Yeah, and it does work towards some redemption in the book as well.
Yes, yes.
Well, I want to tell people who are just tuning in, we're talking about the book Celestial Blue Skies. It is a first novel by my guest, Maggie Collins, who is an alum of UL. Her book was published by Battered Suitcase Press and was nominated for all kinds of awards. Lots of book clubs have picked up the book, and you've actually spoken for some book clubs, and you were actually on WWNO for their book program as well. So lots of notes. Notice that this book has been getting written by someone from this area and a story of people from this area. So what is the story? Originally, it was called that old folktale, The Curse of the Mulatto. That's what you started off with.
Yes, and that was part of my refining. Mm-hmm. It was called The Curse of the Mulatto at first, and then I changed it to Celestial Blue Skies because I didn't want to offend anybody, you know, because a lot of people find the word mulatto offensive. So I did change it to Celestial Blue Skies.
But there also seems to be something else working. Like there is a redemption that happens in the book.
Yeah, there is a redemption.
Yes.
Because it's about a lady. It's about this lady. It's about Celeste. Celeste is the daughter of Toot, and that's a name that we have a lot in Acadiana, mm-hmm. Toot. We have a lot of Toots. I knew a lot of Toots growing up. We don't have that name everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So Celeste is the daughter of Toot, and Toot is a loose woman in a small town. And those two don't go together. And she has a lot of illegitimate children, and Celeste is one. She doesn't know who her daddy's fathers are because she's been out and about too much. She's kind of like in the oldest profession. And so what happens is that Celeste has to live through all of this, through all the rumors and through the meanness of the small town. And you know, the whole family believes that they're cursed because the father is a traitor, which is a faith healer. He's a faith healer, and Maymay, who's another woman in the story, believes that the family is cursed because, you know, traitor comes from Acadiana. They're faith healers that heal people through the hands. And they believe when they die a hard death. So that's kind of like I see you're shaking your head. You heard about that?
Yes, absolutely. And so part of the story is that conflict between his gift, his profession, and what the formal church feels about that profession.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So your story, it's set in, of course, you're from Lauraville, mm-hmm. so it's not really set in Lauraville, but a small fictional South Louisiana town mm-hmm. called
Belle Place, which means pretty place.
A pretty place. So it's a very interesting things that you juxtapose with each other. Beautiful things along with some very tragic circumstances. So there's always these juxtapositions of opposites in your book that I find fascinating.
Yes.
Were you aware of that as you were writing
the
book? Yeah,
I was. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the good aspects and the evil aspects. You know, the conflict between the African culture, the Creole culture, and wanting to be modern. And, you know, and we kind of losing the African culture and losing the Creole culture to try to fit in with mainstream America.
And you really see that. And I love the way you put those different points of view in the voice of the different women. And you really see that conflict with the modern culture. I guess when you go into the voice of Maymay, and she talks about what everything that surrounds them and all of the how they try to live their life and try to be very simple. And how did you, what aspects did you choose from your upbringing to really focus to give the flavor of this area? Because you do that quite well also. Just things in the environment, things in the home. What was very important to you to give the feeling of in this book?
Well, I tell you what, I'm an old country girl raised on a dirt road.
And you wanted people to feel
around a lot of sugar cane.
That's right. And you...
In the book, you see, it has sugar cane on the front of it. And
that's,
I mean,
right.
You know, that sugar cane, we had, you know, just being lonely a lot, you know, in the small town, not much to do. And, you know, you're just surrounded by sugarcane and you're surrounded by not much to do, just a rural lifestyle. And that part, and it talks about how the character read a lot. And that's something that I did when I was young. I read a lot, and I'm still reading. I'm getting my sons to read. We all have blogs to keep track of our reading, and that's important. You know, we need to read more. And I'm getting the boys to keep track of their readings with the blog, and I'm keeping track of my reading with the blog.
I mean, you have some people calling up here to say, how are you doing that with your children? Good for you. What a wonderful thing that your mom is doing that for you.
Yeah, so we kind of brag about our writing. If anything is good to be, is to brag about your writing. And I encourage parents to do that, too. You know, start a blog with your children. If you don't know how to do it, go on YouTube, and they always have those tutorials on YouTube. Because, you know, they get on there and they play all these games all the time.
And they could be writing about what they're reading.
And they could be writing about what they're reading, yeah, and then sharing it with their friends. And you can make it like a game. You know, you could say, let's see who can read two books. Let's see whoever blogs about the most books. You know, they'll get a little. This is an educational diagnostician coming out.
And, yeah, and we also want to say that you got a degree in English education. So
yes,
that's very important.
English and English education, mm-hmm, and special education. And I kind of want to go back. I want to get my MFA, and I also want to get my I would love to get a doctorate's degree in psychology to go with my ed diagnostician. So I'm thinking about doing those things.
Well,
really busy.
From Bell Place to the world. That's pretty amazing. And, you know, what you're describing now really is the modern world. Technology and your children are able to not only read online, but write online and share that writing online with other people. Mm-hmm. And the people you're talking about in the story, Celestial Blue Skies, that's a much simpler way of reading and intaking information. Very, very a deep contrast there. But that is how you grew up, and you acquired a wonderful love of reading from that.
Yes, I loved reading. We had a bookmobile in the rural areas. Like I said, we lived on a dirt road around a lot of sugarcane, but we had the bookmobile that would come in. You know, you get on the bookmobile and you get books, and that helped out a lot. You know, that kept me out of trouble reading books.
Well, and it seems to do that for the central character.
Yes,
Celeste,
it does
as
that
well.
For Celeste, yeah, as well.
There's a wonderful scene where she's reading a book in a very unusual circumstance. And I think maybe I'll have you read that passage before we continue talking further about the book. Again, my guest, Maggie Collins, has published her first novel, Celestial Blue Skies, with Battered Suitcase Press. The main character is Celeste, of the title, Celestial Blue Skies. She, and maybe set this scene up, where they are,
yes,
and how,
yes,
they got to this moment.
I'm going to set this scene up. This title is Chapter 16 of Celestial Blue Skies. It's told from Celeste's point of view. It's The Curse of the Mulatto, which was an article that's in Louisiana Cultural Vistas. If you Google it, you can see the article. Louisiana Cultural Vistas is a wonderful magazine. You really need to try to invest in that magazine.
And that is the magazine of the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, that nonprofit.
Oh, yes,
organization.
It is. And the photography with it was just so awesome. So if you get a chance and you're interested in the book, do check out the article. It's online, The Curse of the Mulatto. I wanted to dedicate a chapter to this, and it's kind of like the central theme of the book, you know, having curses and generational themes here. My Uncle Romare told this to me, this folktale. It was told from his ancestors told it to him. Okay, and this scene, Celeste is going to see Miss Canoe, who is a lady who's in the old folks' home, and she's dying, and she wants to visit her. So they live in poverty, and that's kind of my story, too. I lived in poverty. I mean, I'm still poor. You know, that
relative,
working poor,
yes,
that we're going, mm-hmm, on. Just about everybody's poor now with the economy. But she's going to see him, and she didn't have a ride. So they hitch a ride on a train. And we used to do that back in the rural South when we used to have a train used to come to Lurleville. That's something else. We used to hitch rides on trains.
That's not all that long ago.
It's not that long ago. I'm only 40-something, mm-hmm, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm 45.
So she is, that is her transportation to see this older woman. Dying,
yeah.
Her only means. And she's brought along kind of a bodyguard with her.
Yeah,
well.
She's brought along her cousin Liver. Right. I'm going to read it. We are the only ones in the car until we see Yankee Doodle with his scraggly beard and work clothes running, trying to hitch a ride on the boxcar. Liver helps him up and he hops in the car. He has a burlap sack with his belongings. Hey there, what y'all say? He has an open mouth with only four rotten teeth, and he smells like cheap corner store liquor. I learned that you can keep your teeth white by using baking powder if you don't have toothpaste, and a towel if you don't have a toothbrush. There's no reason not to brush your teeth, Mrs. Canoe would always tell me. I keep silent and begin to read my book. Liver begins to eat the food in the brown paper bag. I fix my fried chicken, bread, macaroni, and moon pies for dessert. Yankee Doodle stares at me. You sure is nice looking, yellow gal. Your hair is so pretty and long. Man, look like I've seen you already somewhere before. Where I seen you at? There's a long pause as Yankee Doodle looks at me. Yankee Doodle's voice explodes and his expression holds the familiar look of the bell-faced residents. Tut! You tut, daughter! Le place blanc! Mais that's a big pitain! Tut pretty but pitain! Yankee Doodle's laugh is thunderous and overwhelming, and he now shows me all of his rotten teeth. His breath stinks and I cover my nose. Liver does not address Yankee Doodle's personal conversation. He is there to make sure that I make it safely to town. He eats his chicken and minds his own business. He whispers to me, if he comes in our space, I'm going to clip him. Don't worry. All y'all crazy back there in them woods. You got that crazy mulatto blood. His eyes drift as he recalls a familiar story. Virgin Mary needed to save her baby, rode a mule, one of y'all mulattoes. She cussed that stubborn tang. He bursts into hilarious laughter. Taking the burlap sack from underneath his rear, he places it underneath his head. Stretching in the corner of the boxcar, he takes a nap. As he wiggles around to get comfortable, he just keeps giggling and whispering. She cussed that mule. Cussed it. Cussed that tang. He he he.
Very strong characters.
Thank you.
Very, and that's just one little description of an experience that Celeste has. So many of them were so strong and very vibrant. I love the scenes at her grandmother's house, at Mémé's house, and how you describe the setting, the yard, and how they ate. And tell us about some of the other characters that you really like. We've mentioned the grandmother, Mémé, Toot, the mother, Celeste. Who are some of the other characters that you really enjoyed writing about?
A lot of people are intrigued with Bumblebee.
Tell us about Bumblebee.
Bumblebee, you see, the family is, most of them are light-skinned, and we do have the light-skinned, dark-skinned thing that goes on in the black community, you know, where you feel that dark-skinned, you wanted to preserve your light-skinned. And now I had that in my family as well, and I'm going to admit it, just about a lot of black people had that in their family.
You're really addressing something that is of great interest to a lot of people, particularly in the smaller towns.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, and Mémé wants to preserve the light-skinned. You know, she wants light-skinned grandbabies. But Bumblebee is dark-skinned, and T-Red is light-skinned. But T-Red loves Bumblebee. And, you know, even though she's dark-skinned. And Mémé...
How did she get her name, Bumblebee?
Bumblebee, that's just her nickname.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I can tell you how T-Red got his name.
Okay.
In Southwest Louisiana, there's this old thing. It's kind of disgusting. But I don't know if you heard, like when a woman puts something in a man's spaghetti, use your imagination, and it's supposed to make him love her a lot. So something red in the man's spaghetti.
T-Red is Mémé's son.
Yes.
Yes.
So and Mémé calls the red thing that they put in the spaghetti a T. So that's how T-Red gets his name.
Right.
So because she doesn't believe that a dark-skinned woman like Bumblebee could T-Red could ever love someone dark like that. But T-Red does. And they have a lot of children together. But Bumblebee is an interesting character. She kind of keeps the family together.
And describe her. You talk a lot about the cooking that she does, that she loves to cook.
Yeah, she loves to cook. She's a good mother, but she's kind of selfish. You know, she makes Maymay and Toot and
Celeste.
And Celeste do a lot of her work.
Well, she does have a lot of children to take care of.
Yeah, so. She does.
She does. That sounds like these people spend a lot of time together. And it sounds like you grew up with a really large, close family as well. Is that a similar description of how you grew up with lots of relatives around?
Yeah, we had a lot of relatives. We were big on family. Had a strong, strong father. And that's something about this novel that, you know, you don't see in every novel. Strong fathers. Strong black men.
And now that's, I also was wondering if because you write very well about the element of the traitor, and Meme's husband is a traitor.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anyone in your family? Or did you
know
of people?
Yeah, my father was a traitor.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people in my family were traitors. My grandfather was a traitor. They call him T-Man because he had a lot of T's that would, you know, they would go in the woods and they would use the T's to heal.
They would brew the T's, yeah, yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, for different sickness and ailments.
Mm-hmm. And how did, I'm sure people would be very curious, since there are a lot of people in your family, it obviously runs in your family, how that was embraced by the community. You mentioned that there was often a conflict between the art of being a traitor and perhaps the Catholic Church. How were your relatives looked at or embraced in the community?
I'm going to tell you something. The Catholic Church, because I wrote another book. I wrote The Last of the Traitors and T-Men. I'm still working on that one because I haven't found the people that I was going to interview. We don't have too many traitors anymore.
They died because all those opportunities.
Because people are not, like you're saying, they're not embracing because they're thinking it comes from Africa, you know, and they don't want that, you know, they don't want to be associated with it. Because I have some of my sisters say, well, that's voodoo, you know. So, you know, and you have some people who said they're not going to do that. But, you know, we need to go back to herbal medicines. I have a book on, you know, herbal medicines and all. But no, the Catholic Church okayed it because I know when I researched The Last of the Traitors and T-Men, you had some priests who used to come to them to get healed, you know, because, you know, they say Hail Marys when they do it.
Well, how close in the character in the book that is the traitor, how closely did you model him after your father?
The book is fictional.
Yes. Mm-hmm. What
but
elements
it's,
you mentioned?
It's just that, you know, I guess from just not too much, just that my knowledge of the traitor.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't model it after my father because my father is a very dark man. This, you know, this T-Man is a mulatto man.
I think people will find, and you mentioned Ernest Gaines earlier, I think people will find fascinating the elements of South Louisiana culture that you express in this book that might be of great mystery to people from other places. You know, that they know certain things about Louisiana, but there are so many subtle elements within communities that we never hear about except if someone who is from the community writes about them. And you really do that quite well in here, sort of demystifying certain aspects of cultures that might not be as evident to the public.
Yes, yes.
So you mentioned a couple of other books that you've written. What is the other one? The one about the traitors?
Yes, The Last of the Traitors and T-Men. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to see if I could get a grant to finish it, you know, because I would have to spend a lot of time in Acadiana actually researching people.
And you live in New Orleans.
And right? I live in New Orleans.
Right.
So it would take a lot of that. And like I said, they don't have too many left. I do have some people I can interview. And then a lot of people don't want to talk about that anymore. So if anybody knows anybody out there who knows any traitors that I could interview.
Well, it's a subject that is of great interest to people, and that is one that you do treat in this book, Celestial Blue Skies.
Yes, I do.
So let's talk just a bit about your process of writing. As I was telling you a bit earlier, a lot of writers are very interested in how other writers write and what their process is. So you mentioned that you had this story, this kernel of this story, but that you refined it a lot. When did you find time to write? With children, with a job? How did you approach writing?
Well, you know, we're off in the summer, the teachers.
That's true.
And I'm going to be honest with you. I wrote the book. It didn't take me long to write at all.
Mm-hmm. It was the...
Because I just came... I feel it came from my ancestors. My ancestors influenced me, you know. I was just influenced by this book. And it probably took me... Because even my husband's like, who writes a book in like 3 months?
Well, if that's how long you have.
I mean, it might have been less than that, you know, but it's refining. It took me so long to refine it because at first I had it under, I had it told from one point of view to it. And a lot of people were like, well, you know, you shouldn't have it from her point of view because she's, you know, a lot of people are not going to like her as a protagonist. So then I changed it to Celeste. And then, you know, so my writing process is just to write. I just write.
And you did mention that you write in the early hours of the morning at night.
Yeah, that's when I find my inspiration.
Mm-hmm. Did you find you lost sleep over it, that you just kind of got so into the writing that you sort of lost yourself?
At times I did. At times I did. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's always a fascinating subject, something you'd probably give a workshop on and let people know
that. I've done workshops before. A lot of people don't come, though. I don't know what it is about reading or writing. A lot of people, they're just not into reading as much, you know. Because I know my library, we have a library in Algiers. And yesterday they were given a workshop and only a couple of people came. When you do book signings, only a couple of people come.
Well, and you know it's the people who are really interested who will go to the workshops.
Those
who really want to learn.
So even if you give it free, a lot of times people just don't come.
Well, the more you put it out there on your blog and encourage people to write and to read, we'll change it one blog at a time.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Again, I would like to tell people that my guest is Maggie Collins. She is an alum of UL Lafayette. Her first novel, Celestial Blue Skies, was published by Battered Suitcase Press, nominated for lots of awards. And if you would like to know more about it, you can search for Celestial Blue Skies and information will come up about that.
Allowed to say where they can get it from?
Well, they can find out about that on your website.
Okay.
And we hope that perhaps we'll have you back when you do finish your other novel.
I would love to come back. This is home to me.
Perhaps that'll be an encouragement for you to finish that next novel.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely. So what was the thing that you, after this process, you've written the book, it's been published, what has been the most satisfying thing about that to you?
Seeing my cover.
You do love that cover. Can you describe the cover and how that came about?
I love. It's like they read my mind when they did the book. That's been very satisfying.
So
to get the wonderful reviews that I did, you know, to get some of the wonderful people who read my book. And I had some people tell me, I just love it.
Well,
I love this book. When I have people tell me that, it just warms my heart.
And inspires
and I had a
and
lot of people who
you.
Tell me, you know, you just captured the our life. My we have a family reunion this weekend, and I know my cousin Terry, she tells me, I just love your book. She says, you know, it's one of the best books I've ever read.
Well, when you can get your family members or the people from your community that you have based the feeling of the place on to tell you that, you've really succeeded because it's an authentic voice and you really rang all those notes truly and clearly. Well, thank you so much for coming all the way from New Orleans. Maggie Collins, her book, Celestial Blue Skies, and you can find out more about it by searching for it. And again, we're just so pleased to have you back here on campus because you are an alum and we love to hear those stories. Well, thank you so much, and also for imparting your love of reading and writing to your children and all of the kids you work with as well.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.